We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. In today's episode, I interview Ziva Meditation founder, Meditation Studio app teacher, and former Broadway actress Emily Fletcher. Emily shares how meditation helps us to be more present in our relationships and how it can actually give us a boost in our sex lives as well. First, we need to learn to love and accept ourselves more completely so that if and when Mr. or Mrs. Right does come along, or if we've already found them, we're not relying on them to fill us up. Meditation, she says, helps us to feel more blissful now, regardless of our situation. And if you happen to be one of the 40 million Americans using online dating services and are going on a first date this week, she also shares how to take all the stress out of that and just enjoy. Before we hear from Emily, I want to give a shout out to one of our podcast partners, Meet Mindful, the online dating site where mindful living meets online dating. Check it out. And this podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. If you want more sleep or just to feel less anxious about all the news or less stressed day to day, Meditation Studio is here for you. Download us in the App Store or on Google Play. If you have questions or suggestions for our podcast or app, email me at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to Untangle. We love having you with us. Now, here's Emily. Emily Fletcher, it is so great to have you back on Untangle.
Feels like coming home. It's nice, like, to chat with you again.
Yay, coming home. It's our sort of hashtag spread the love month. So I know that you are awesome at working on meditations that relate to relationships and dating and sex. And so I have about 10 questions that I want to ask you today. And the first one is, how does meditation help us in relationships?
Well, I think a lot of us are going into our relationships expecting people to fill ourselves up or fill us up, right? You know, there's that old line from the movies that is, you complete me. And I feel like that one line really did a lot of damage to our relationships, because then we all go into these these spiritual agreements with people, thinking, okay, well, I'm 80% fulfilled. And so if you can just fill me up the other 20%, then we're good. But the reality is that no person, place or thing, but certainly not a person, has the capacity to fill you up. If you don't have the ability to fill yourself up from the source, then that's never going to come from an external source. And so then we go into these relationships with these secret spiritual contracts of being like, okay, I'm coming to you to fill me up. And then inevitably the person breaks the contract, and then we're mad at them for not filling us up. And then we break up with them, and then we think, okay, well, someone else is going to fill me up. And so the way that we like to look at relationships is really as an outlet for fulfillment, meaning that if I'm 80% fulfilled, I use my relationship as an outlet for that 80% fulfillment, not as a place to go to fill myself up. And so you start to become more self-referral for your happiness, and you start to really plug into the source of fulfillment every day, twice a day with your practice, and then you get to use your relationships as a means by which to deliver that fulfillment. And then that becomes this beautiful upward spiral.
Talk a little bit about how the meditation process that you teach really works to fill you up with that 80%.
So, I mean, ideally we want to reach for 100, but I'll explain it from a neurological standpoint first and then a spiritual standpoint. But with the style of meditation that I teach, within 30 to 45 seconds, your brain and body start flooding with dopamine and serotonin, which are actually bliss chemicals. And they feel really nice, and they make you feel satiated. So any addiction that you have, money, sex, food, wine, shoes, whatever you happen to be addicted to, what you're actually addicted to is that hit of dopamine and serotonin that you get when you engage in that activity. And so what the meditation does is that you wake up, you know, you freshen up, and then you meditate first thing before coffee, breakfast, or computer. And you're basically flooding your brain with that dopamine and serotonin. So it quite literally gives you the feeling of fulfillment. And then you get to open your eyes and come out of that meditation and start to use your to-do list as a means by which to deliver your fulfillment. And relationship becomes part of that. Like, you know, what can I give to this? What can I bring to this versus what can I take? Now, obviously, every relationship has some give and take, and we're never all 100% fulfilled all the time, which is why we're still human. And it's why relationships are here to teach us our lessons. So it's not about striving for perfection. It's about going into the relationship as fulfillment, looking for need instead of need looking for fulfillment.
You know, we talk a lot about self-love and self-compassion. Do you think that what you're talking about in terms of filling ourselves up with this bliss chemical is also tied to self-love and really taking care of ourselves and forgiving ourselves and being more compassionate with ourselves?
I do. I think that it's much easier to love everything if you're filled with bliss chemistry. You know, in this day and age, life is stressful. Our food isn't food. There's all kinds of political changes. There's all kinds of, you know, technological advancements that are costing our brain and body something. So if you're not actively managing your stress, then your body's going to be flooding with adrenaline and cortisol. And it's much harder to practice self-compassion, self-love. When your body and brain are in survival mode, you're just looking out for number one. And the ripple effect of that is quite great. I mean, you can't reason with your brain when you're in fight or flight. So when you get out of that survival mode, it's much easier to be compassionate with yourself. And you're already setting yourself up for loving and self-love because you've already got that chemistry flowing in your body and your brain.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of, you know, we don't meditate to be really great meditators. We meditate so that we are better human beings off the cushion. So what are some of the ways that it makes us a better partner in relationship with others?
Well, I mean, so we've talked really about how that impacts your, you know, your romantic relationships. But the way I think it starts to impact you at work and with your friends is quite similar, really. I mean, so actually let's do an exercise. I want you to think, imagine you're having a dinner party tonight. And when you think about all of the guests that you could invite, I want you to go through and think about the three people who stress you out the most. Three people in your life, and this is not going to be, you don't have to write it down, you don't have to share it with them, so you can be really honest. But I want everyone to just, you can close your eyes if you want to, and think about three people who stress you out the most. Now, my hypothesis is that those three people have something in common. And what they have in common is that they are not self-sufficient. in some way, shape, or form, they're very needy, meaning that they just never have enough money. They never have enough time. They've just gone through a breakup. There's just something in their life where they just can't get their proverbial, you know, stuff together. To be friends with them, it stresses us out, right? Because they're not self-sufficient. They're needy in some way. And then if we go back to our dinner party, think about the three people that you would invite first. Like your three best friends, the three people that you know are going to be fun and funny and just really take the dinner party to a whole new level. Now, my hypothesis about those three people is that they are self-sufficient. They always have time. They're always ahead of the ball. They come early. They bring you some flowers or a bottle of champagne. They stay late and they help you to clean up the dishes. And they always have a joke. They always have a smile. And they're interested in how your life is going. And so the common theme there is that they've been able to take care of themselves in some way, and they're here to see what they can offer. So this is my sort of exercise I like to do with people. And then I like to ask the question, which one of these camps do you want to be in? If your friends were doing this exercise and thinking about you, which camp would you go in? And so I think it's really important that we practice mental and spiritual hygiene, meaning that we take care of our own stress. We fill ourselves up from the source of fulfillment. And then we use all of our relationships, our work, our romantic, our personal relationships, as a means by which to ask the question, what can I contribute versus what can I take?
You answered that so beautifully by extending it to a good friend or a colleague at work, because we often judge other people, but we forget to look at how we land in the world. And I think that meditation helps us to be so much more self-aware about how we land in front of other people. And understanding that gives us such a bigger, broader perspective. How does it help us open our hearts, you know, and forgive, for example, because everybody's sort of walking around being really angry right now. We're angry a little bit at the world. We're angry at the news. But then we bring that anger sometimes into our personal relationships. You know, what are you sharing now to help people manage this?
Yeah, so I feel like this is a two-parter. I can speak about, you know, how meditation helps us to open our hearts. And then I'm happy to speak about, you know, what's happening with the political changes on a bigger scale and what we can all do, no matter what your political leanings are, things you can do to help stay sane and, again, help contribute. But what I found, so I used to, you know, be on Broadway and I used to teach acting for years. And without fail, all of my acting students who would come and take the meditation course with me at Ziva, like 2 weeks later, they would come back and sometimes their acting would go from unwatchable to they'd be getting standing ovations. And I was really curious, like, why is this happening? Meditation doesn't make you more talented. Why are they suddenly getting better? And what I realized is that, and this is true for all humans, but it just gets highlighted when you're an actor, because your whole job is to be vulnerable. Your whole job is to open your heart and to feel with the entire spectrum of emotions. And so I feel like most of us, before we have a daily meditation practice, it's really easy to be under the illusion that your happiness exists on the other side of the acquisition of some desire. Right? Like, I'll be happy once I get married. I'll be happy once I have a kid. I'll be happy when this kid gets the F out of my house. And so it's like our happiness just becomes this little carrot that gets further and further away, and then we die. And so if you're living your whole life under this illusion of the I'll be happy when syndrome, and believing this illusion that some person, place, or thing has the ability to make you, then you also believe that those things have the ability to break you. And if every person, place, and thing you're interacting with has the ability to break you, well, then you better build up some calluses and you better build up some shields, because you're quite vulnerable. If you're giving someone that much power, then it makes sense to protect yourself from them. But what meditation does is that, again, it allows you to access that bliss and fulfillment internally. You start to become more self-referral for your happiness and less object referral. So when you start to see that all this stuff, the money, the job, the zero, the relationship, the pair of shoes, that this stuff actually can't make me happy, then it also cannot make me sad. And so once you start to live that every day viscerally, then you can start to put down the shield. The calluses can start to soften. And in the near term, people are pretty terrified of that, because we think, I don't want to be more sensitive. I don't want to feel more. But I actually think that meditation makes it non-negotiable. It softens those calluses and you start feeling things more fully, but actually you also start to feel faster.
Well, but you also can sit with those feelings. You get more able to sit with those feelings.
Right. Like you're not so afraid of them. So yes, you sit with them, you feel them more intensely, and then they move through you faster. So you can move through to the new now. And the reality is, if we're really truly in the right now, then we're fine. You know, 99% of our stress hangs out in the past and the future. And that's where our stress is. We're reviewing the past, rehearsing the future. But if we can actually be right here in the right now, that's where our bliss hangs out. Meditation is not about not feeling. It's actually about letting you feel things more fully so you can move through to the present moment.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Can you talk a little bit about the word bliss? Often we think of bliss as sort of this kind of far out thing. And I don't think that's exactly how you mean it. So I would love for you to tell us a little bit about what is that bliss? It's not like you're walking around with this giant smile on your face and a love bubble over your head, but there is something close to that, right?
Yeah, thank you so much for clarifying that, because I use it so much that I think I forget that it's not a word that people use all the time. Bliss is not necessarily blissful. I would define bliss as the piece of you that knows that everything's okay. Right? Bliss is the piece of you that knows that everything is working out exactly as it's meant. And the reality is, it's possible to experience bliss even when you're sad. It's possible to experience bliss even when you're angry. And it might not be big. It might be 0.0001%, but there's always a little sliver of you that trusts that things are going to work out. And what I find is that as you start meditating, that background of bliss gets bigger and bigger. And so paradoxically, that is the thing that allows you to start feeling your emotions more fully, the whole spectrum of emotions. And so I think a lot of us, if we don't have a self-sufficient and repeatable means by which to tap into our own bliss and fulfillment, then we're terrified of ever really fully surrendering to the feelings, because we're terrified that it's going to drop us into a depression, or that if the emotions come up and out, it's going to be an overwhelming tsunami of emotion. But the way I like to think about meditation is that it's like a pressure cooker. So think about a pressure cooker, and on the top, there's that little valve, you know, that's like, and it's just slowly releasing that pressure. Well, that's what the meditation does, is that every day, twice a day, we release that pressure. And so when the feelings do come, it's not like this combustible thing that's just going to explode and overwhelm you, because you've decreased it to a space where it's actually manageable, so you can surrender to it and feel it and trust that you're going to move through it.
That makes so much sense. I think that's a great way to describe it. And I love that idea that we become more self-sufficient and almost complete with all of the feelings that we have. We didn't get to the part about forgiveness, so I'd like to talk about that too. But I think that does sort of tie into how we are in relationship.
You know, before I started meditating, I was in kind of borderline abusive relationships. I was very much looking to my relationships to fill me up. They were very volatile, lots of fighting, lots of drama. Now I'm in this really supportive, kind, adult, compassionate, and a little bit boring marriage. And that's like exactly how I want it. You know, it's not this thing that's like super dramatic and like, what is he going to say? And does he love me or not? It's not about taming or claiming. It's a place for mutual growth and mutual support and respect. Once one partner gets into a meditation practice or some sort of spiritual practice, it's really easy and tempting to want to then fix your partner or try and force your meditation habit on your partner. And I really want to just share my experience and have it be a word to the wise, is that you can't be the meditation police. You can't force your practice on your partner. Everybody has to come to this at their own time. And if you really want someone meditating, the best thing you can do is clean your own house. You know, just keep shining brighter, be more kind, more adaptive, And then eventually, when they're interested, they'll start to ask you questions. They'll start to demonstrate something that we call worthy inquiry. Overall, you do become a better communicator. And I've seen this habit play out, you know, thousands of times with my students. You become a better communicator because you stop trying to force your agenda on someone else's words. And instead, you're able to actually listen and hear what they're saying and what they want versus trying to be so attached to what you think you need. An indicator that I find that's helpful to know whether or not a relationship is still relevant is this question. Is my preference to surrender my preference? So I know that seems a little crazy, but like imagine you and your partner are going to go to a movie and you want to go see a rom-com and he wants to go see the new Star Wars movie. Now, if you ask yourself the question, is my preference to surrender my preference? Meaning, will I get more joy out of, you know, allowing him to get this thing that he wants versus me getting what I want? If that continues to be true for you, probably an indicator that the relationship is still relevant and still has something to teach you.
I'm going to shift for a minute so we don't get too deep into your personal relationship.
My husband will be so thankful.
I know, right? So I'm going to have you flashback because you have done really cool meditations on Meditation Studio app and people love them. And one of them is meditation for a first date. What do you suggest? Like, what are the top five things to keep in mind when you're going on a first date and you're looking for the love of your life?
Such a good question. And might I just say, like, I have so much compassion and respect for people who are dealing with the online dating and the app dating. You know, I feel like now we're in this space of the tyranny of choice. You know, it's not natural to have access to thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of potential partners right at your fingertips. And so I think even if you did find someone that was really great and really charming, how do you fight that curiosity of, well, what's just on the other side of this swipe? What's on the other side of this swipe? And so I think the way meditation can help with that is really giving you permission to trust your own intuition. And when you find something that's working, sit with it and explore it and be present with that versus the what's next, or the I'll be happy when syndrome. So I think that's one thing to keep in mind. But let's say, you know, you have a date coming up, you're getting ready for it. I think some really fun things to do are to remind yourself, even before you go on the date, that this person is not the key to my fulfillment, right? This person is an outlet for my fulfillment, and really treat even the date like that. How much can I make them laugh? How present can I be? How kind can I be? How many questions can I ask about them versus coming to it from a place of evaluation of what have you done for me lately? And do you meet my standards of what I expect a person to be that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with? And then I think the other thing is to really let the date be the date. You know, please, you know, try not to go into one, you know, dinner or one coffee date with a person and put all of your expectations for the rest of your life on this 1-2 hour exchange, because no person, place, or thing can live up to that. And the reality is, even if you do get married to this person, they're still not going to be capable of being your entertainer, your lover, your business consultant, your roommate, your handyman. Like, we can't expect all things from one person. And I think that's sometimes this expectation that we put on a potential spouse. But the thing is, you find what you find, and then you fill that in with your friends and with your other relationships. And so I think just taking some of the preciousness and the pressure off of this role that we think this imaginary spouse is supposed to bring us, I think that helps. And then to really practice present moment awareness. And this is where I think mindfulness is so helpful on dates, because when you start to find yourself inevitably spinning into the future, which is almost impossible to avoid, when you find yourself speculating of like, oh, is this a person I could look at every morning for the rest of my life? Instead, just bring it back. What am I smelling? What am I tasting? What am I hearing? What am I seeing right now? How does this coffee taste right now? Am I having fun right now? And the reality is, the more present you are in this moment, the more you're going to enjoy the date and the more likelihood you have of having an enjoyable second date.
And you're right. It does give you that space to enjoy it a little bit more. So it's really good to have these tools in your toolbox to be able to handle it and to be, you know, come from a place of confidence and strength versus ability.
Beautiful.
Let's switch to sex and politics, because I know you do a lot of workshops around how meditation helps with improving your sex life. True?
I do. You do. I do. Okay. I started talking about meditation and sex because no one else really was. And I think that was happening because so many people think that they shouldn't be thinking at all when they meditate. We somehow think that thoughts are the enemy when we meditate, which I feel really strongly about that is not true. And then so we thought, well, if I shouldn't be thinking, I certainly shouldn't be thinking about sex. And because a lot of the meditation practices that a lot of Westerners are doing these days are derivative of monastic practices. And one of the key attributes of monks is that a lot of them are celibate. And so what we practice at Ziva is more of a style of meditation that was made for people with busy minds and busy lives. It's designed to be integrated into daily life. And sex is a part of this life. So I just wanted to open up the conversation. And the other reason I wanted to talk about it is that a lot of my students would come back after, you know, even a few months, sometimes a year of practicing, and they would say, Emily, you know, I know you joked about better sex, but this is crazy. A woman who had never had an orgasm before, like literally never in her life, the week after she took the course, she had her first orgasm, and I was so excited. And the other thing is that it starts to impact your fertility. Like right now we have 70 Ziva babies. So that's something I like to warn people now. It's like, if you're not looking to get pregnant, you need to take care when you start a meditation practice. So that's why I started talking about it. But here are the ways that meditation can impact your sex life. So the simplest way is that in the style that I teach, you're giving your body rest that's 5 times deeper than sleep. And that's not insignificant because, you know, when you give your body the rest that it needs, it knows how to heal itself, but also you're more awake. So you do this 20-minute meditation, it's like the equivalent of an hour and a half nap, and then you have this second wind on the other side. So when you get home from work, you know, you do a quick 20-minute meditation and you have more energy to make dinner, more energy to have a conversation with your partner, more energy to actually get it on. 1 in 4, 25% of people who live with someone are saying that the number one reason that they don't have more sex is because they're tired. And meditation is a great way to give yourself like a boost of energy. And then the other thing that we know about meditation is that it's a powerful stress relieving tool. And so the less stress you have in your body, less cortisol and adrenaline. And this is big because if women have too much cortisol in their bodies, then they become physically incapable of orgasm. And if men have too much adrenaline, they become physically incapable of erection. Yes, you can connect more spiritually, but also just on a very cut and dry physiological standpoint, if you're too stressed, basically, your body's preparing for a tiger attack. It's not that interested in procreation. So that sort of gets put on the back burner. The other cool thing that happens besides the fulfillment that we were talking about is that meditation increases something called mirror neural activity. And mirror neurons are, here's a very gross oversimplification, but imagine that my brain has boomerangs and your brain has boomerangs. And mirror neurons, they like come out and they dance with each other and then they report back to your brain. And so mirror neurons is the reason why you can tell that your best friend is upset before they even say anything. Or when you walk into a yoga studio and the energy feels really nice. And so basically this, as you meditate and you increase your mirror neural activity, it makes you a more generous lover because you're going to start to receive more pleasure from watching your partner receive pleasure.
So we've talked a lot about relationships and I'm so grateful for all this great wisdom that you have. So lucky to have you here. We also have relationships with the world at large, which is our society. And a lot of us are feeling really, really super stressed about this right now. Just so much change in the air and so much challenge, as you were saying, whatever side you're on. Now, how do you think about meditation and its support of us as we go through these bigger changes in the world?
So thank you for asking this. I think it's such an important topic. And what I've noticed, well, so, you know, right now we're recording this, it's February now, but we just went through January. January is typically our biggest month at Ziva. Sometimes we'll initiate over 100 people in just this first month of the year. And this month, our numbers were way, way down. And I was thinking about it. I was like, why? And I had this feeling that people actually wanted to be angry, that they wanted to hold on to this anger. And now I know that not everyone is angry, but everyone is experiencing a lot of change, right? Everyone is having to adapt to this change. And if you are in the camp of people that are angry right now, I think we want to bless the anger. It's like, thank you, anger. Thank you for waking me up. And now that you've served your purpose, I don't need you anymore. You know, I needed this anger to wake me up. I needed this feeling to lift the veil of complacency. But now it's up to me to take action. And if I want to take action, I'm going to be much more effective. I'm going to be able to affect much more positive change if I'm coming to that from a place of clear-headedness, intuition, creative problem solving. And the reality is, if you're angry, then you're easy to manipulate. And stress makes us all stupid. And a lot of people don't like hearing that. But the reality is, if you're stressed, your body's preparing for that imaginary tiger attack. So you don't have your full cognitive capabilities available to you. And so I think regardless of what side of this political spectrum you're on, you want to really take care that you're nourishing yourself, that you're moving out of these feelings of anger and rage so that you can really start to affect positive change. According to the Vedas, there's only one thing and we're all it. And so as I help you, I help myself. And as I hurt you, I hurt myself. And I think that right now what's happening with the bigger political conversation is that things are going to extremes. Because we have sort of extreme voices happening in power, people are answering that with an extreme voice. Where can we find unity? Where can we find sameness? Where can we find common ground? Because I really believe in my heart of hearts, most of us want the same thing. Most of us want to feel safe. We want a prosperous country. We want a prosperous world. We want to take care of those in need. And we want our needs taken care of. And so I think regardless of what your political viewpoints are, we have to approach this conversation as a spiritual practice and start to see ourselves inside of others and start to see others inside of us. And as much as possible, move this conversation face to face instead of digitally, because we're all brave and we're all experts behind a Facebook keyboard. But when you actually have to look someone in the eyes and acknowledge that they're human and acknowledge that they do have thoughts and ideas and opinions and beliefs that might be different from yours, but that doesn't make them less valid or less right. I think that that's the only way we're going to move this conversation forward.
I think that we're going to have to do a whole podcast on this topic. There's so much that you just shared that is so important, and it could be pivotal in how we all think about the stress that we're having right now. So I really appreciate that, Emily. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming back on Untangle. I'm so thrilled to have you. And I hope you'll come back and host some shows for us. And we would love to see you again.
Yes, it would be my pleasure. It does feel like coming home. And thank you for having me.
Thanks so much to Emily for her tips on how to improve our relationships. For more information, check out her website and upcoming courses at zivameditation.com. Once again, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play. We'll see you next week.